Alrighty, good morning, everybody. Yep, we are here. We are live. It is Monday. It is the 24th of March. I don't know if you've noticed, but the trees are starting to go yellow and red. And oh, Leanne, your microphone just had a complete direction in front of you.
Yeah,
it just started sliding right down.
Straight to my nether regions.
Maybe the microphone knows something we don't.
You know?
Well, very exciting. We've got a lot to do today. We've got a lot of people to talk to, things to do, places to go, and you're going to be a part of that with us this morning. So thanks for coming and waking up so early.
Mm.
Yeah, people do.
Yeah.
I woke up really early on Saturday for some reason.
Oh, you see, that happens.
Yeah, and I liked it.
Yeah, I also woke up at about, well, my cat woke me up at about 4 yesterday. Ugh. And I was really angry because, you know, today is early. But I actually quite enjoyed it because at one point I'd already done a whole lot of stuff and it was 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, here we go. Just put that back up. There's a nice prayer from Dave to start things. Lord, grant me to greet the coming day in peace and with firm conviction that your will governs all. All right. Well, there we go. There's one way to start the day.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of my friend when he was young. His their maid gave him a thing that's like a passage from the Bible, I think it is. And it's, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Isn't that part of the Alcoholics Anonymous first prayer?
You would know.
I don't know.
It sounds
familiar. I've never been, but
I'll take your
familiar
word for it. But yeah, okay, Leanne. No, well done, huh? So, all right, we've got Dr. Hanan later on, so we can we can get into all kinds of things with him. We've got a guy. Remember the lion tamer, lion man that I told you about that
didn't make it past because we thought he'd been eaten.
But no, he hasn't been eaten. He'll be joining us this morning, which is very exciting. Is that right, James? Okay. And there are no guests that you have invited for this morning who aren't actually on, who are on Wednesday that are going to sit around. No. Okay.
Shame, did those guys have to come back?
Yeah, of course they did. No, they were terrific. They were really fun.
Good.
They were fun to have here. So, all right, I've got a bunch of stuff to show you, which is funny and weird. And, you know, we've been on a bit of a mad tear lately with, like, weird white people singing, you know, and we're here to save democracy, that kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, like it's amazing to me how many people have visions of how important they are. Like a group of elderly white people are going to save democracy and they're singing about it. They really believe it. It's like delusions of grandeur, right? Instead of, well, we'll tidy up our neighborhood.
Yes.
You know, no, we're going to save democracy. That's, God has chosen us to save democracy.
I thought about that woman. I don't know if you remember her, as I was throwing away a bottle of water.
Yeah.
Had a bit of water in the bottle. Oh, yeah. Remember, she wanted to save
the trapped water.
All the trapped water in the world.
She was very concerned. This is a serious person who considered that all the trapped water, because she lives in LA or whatever, and she doesn't know that water actually exists in nature in the first place.
Yeah.
But in the second place, she was very worried that all the landfills filled with bottles, plastic bottles, that had a little bit of water in, they were taking that water out of the water cycle and that we'd never get it back. It was lost for eternity.
That's shame.
Anyway, I mean,
you know,
it does make me, before I empty, I throw it down, you know,
pour it down the drain.
So, a couple of things I wanted to get into this morning. We have some news. Apparently, Ford, the motor company, has raised concerns over South Africa's struggling transport and logistics infrastructure. They're not the first ones, obviously. There have been a couple of others who've said the same. They're warning inefficiencies in rail and ports are increasing costs and making local vehicle production less competitive. You know, I really don't want to start our Monday by talking about the government, because I just feel like it's such a moany, whiny, shitty thing to start with. But these guys just—I don't know what they do. Like, what is Cyril doing? I mean, like, besides expressing solidarity with Palestine, and going to meetings with other leaders where nothing gets done and everything gets decided.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Oh, let's move towards net zero. You know, climate change is real. But then nothing happens. And the real problem here is that we've got companies like Ford who want to be able to manufacture cars in South Africa, and they can't because our logistics and our infrastructure is so bad that now the ports and rail are making it too expensive for them to be able to do what they do. They can go and do this in Asia, and it'll cost them a fraction of what it costs here. So then we lose jobs. It's a very, very big problem. So the Ford Africa president, a guy called Neil Hill, highlighted that reliance on road and logistics bottlenecks threaten future investments. Similar concerns were raised by Volkswagen a while ago and by Toyota. They pointed to unreliable power supply as another problem, rising costs and the competition from cheaper Asian imports as major challenges. The decline in local vehicle assembly threatens jobs and investment. Industry leaders are calling for policy changes to support domestic manufacturing. Well, policy changes, yes, but actually a government that was interested in doing things. And by government, I don't exempt all those parties that are in the GNU. They're also part of the government.
Yeah.
Like, get involved, you fuckers. That's why you're in there, aren't you?
It's embarrassing. It's got to the point where it's really embarrassing now.
They're so cuck at everything.
Yeah, just, again, driving in and looking at the state of everything. And the G20 summit on at the moment, and you see all the blue light brigades.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, and all these important people from all over the world who are now seeing. I mean, what what must it be like for them? They must be asking questions like, why are the roads like this? Why are the robots like this?
Yeah. They must be saying, what the hell's wrong with this city?
Yeah.
Ricky says, I'm sure Cyril will be shocked about this news when he hears about it in 2030. Oh, what happened? I didn't realize. What a disaster. Oh, Joburg is not working? Why? How did that happen?
Mm.
It's unbelievable, that guy. He really just doesn't know. He lives in a bubble. He's the bubble boy.
Mm.
Oh, I watched two movies this weekend. You know, I had one of those lazy days yesterday where I did as little as possible. So I've been meaning to watch this movie for a long time. Reagan, the story of Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm trying to think who the actor is. It's something Quinn. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Not Quincy Jones.
No, man. Let me just see here quickly. Dennis Quaid. Sorry, Quinn.
Oh, Dennis Quaid.
Very good. I should have known that. Anyway, Dennis Quaid, very good. He plays Ronald Reagan. The woman who does Nancy is very good, too. And gets the voice right and the look right and everything. He's actually very, very good. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like the greatest movie I've ever seen. Right?
Yeah.
There's not like acting that's going to blow your mind or sequences that are just so evocative or make you nostalgic or any of that stuff. Because, you see, Reagan was really president while we were just too young.
Mm.
But I do remember, because he was president, and I was at that age, that's how he's always been my focus and simulacrum for what a president should be. So whenever I think of a president, I think of...
He's like your benchmark.
A version of Ronald Reagan, because he was this kind of strong, no-nonsense guy, but he was a good, solid American, you know? We're not going to take it anymore, Mr. Gorbachev. You know, the kinds of things that he would do. He had a very strong set of principles. I mean, he was a tremendous guy. I think he makes all the other presidents look fairly kind of dorky and loose and not particularly dignified.
Mm.
Like Reagan had a strength about him.
Yeah.
He projected strength. And I don't think we've had a president. I mean, there was George H.W. Bush after that who, you know, he's the one who threw up in the Japanese prime minister's lap or whatever. And there was Bill Clinton, who was constantly fucking interns.
Yeah.
Just so many interns. That
rows and rows.
The Oval
and
Office
rows
just became like, you know, those influencer, those girls, porn stars that are just like fucking their way through thousands of men, right?
Yeah.
Like Clinton was that, but for women.
Mm.
Anyway, then there was George W. Bush. Well,
that's when the comedy really started. Right, now,
he wasn't a serious person.
Not at all.
Okay, he was like a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Barack Obama, who in his first term, we were all like, wow, okay, this guy has serious potential. Second term, it's all like, nah, it's not working. And then you had Trump. Trump won. Then we had Biden. And now Trump too. I mean, Ronald Reagan was the guy.
Mm.
You know, he truly, he got it. He knew that, and he was an actor, but he knew what a president should have been looking like, saying, doing.
Maybe because he was an actor?
Maybe. Maybe that's, you know, I always criticize politicians when they're performative.
Mm.
But I think the difference was that when he was acting, he knew he wasn't actually doing anything. When he was president, he made sure that the actions followed the pretending.
Mm.
I mean, he was very good at like getting the Russians to the table and being hard-assed with them. I mean, he didn't just let them get away with anything. And essentially, he won the Cold War. Anyway, very good. So Dennis Quaid, good job there. And then I watched Master and Commander. Remember the old Russell Crowe movie?
I don't.
Oh, man. Do you guys remember it? It's like he's in the British Navy and he is the commander of a ship in, I think they're sailing in the South Atlantic and rounding Cape Horn, and they're chasing a French vessel. And Russell Crowe is the captain.
Mm.
So good. Master and Commander. That's the one. Such a good movie.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Have you... Because it really is quite viral at the moment.
What, do I need a mask?
We spoke.
Oh, there's a nice cough.
Told you. Oh. We spoke about it last week and you were not impressed by the series Adolescence. Are you seeing it pop up on your?
No.
Okay. Maybe it's.
No, we'll see.
Maybe it's just my algorithm. But I wondered if you changed your mind. But we'll wait.
Well, I just think that there are so many good movies that I missed over the years because I never really was a movie guy.
Mm.
So now I'm rediscovering all of these and I'm like, wow, this is actually pretty good. Anyway, I think the Reagan one was released last year, so that's not so old. Mm. But there are a bunch of old ones. So here's some interesting comments. Gareth, you're going to be part of the Truth. Are you going to be part of the Truth Podcast Initiative? Rob Herzog is launching soon. Apparently a few high-profile podcasters are going to be doing this together. Yeah, I mean, we're going to get involved as The Real Network because when it comes to making studios available and all the rest of it, we're happy to help out there, and I think it's a good initiative. So Rob Herzog and a bunch of other people have got together, and they want to create an alternative network that can provide you with data and relevant information and a point of view that you aren't getting from the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very good idea. You know, the more the merrier. And wherever we can help, we'll help. Rebellious Ruth says, with the amount of terrible movies out there, we watch an oldie now and again. We watched Interstate 60. Good cast. Dated but entertaining. I can't say I know what Interstate 60 mm-hmm. is, but okay. Dirk says, it's easy to portray strength of the world's largest army and economy behind you. My biggest wish is to just have a competent and pragmatic president. Oh, why? Where's the G20? Oh, it's here in Sandton. I didn't know. I think I need to pee. Oh, there's a toilet. What a surprise. This guy is just unbelievable. Been binge-watching Catch Me a Killer on Showmax. It's about Mickey Pistorius' career and the cases she was involved in. Remember, we've interviewed her a couple of times. If you loved Mindhunters, you'll love this. And then Adolescence is brilliant, says Karen. Outstanding acting and an eye-opening story. Adolescence was disturbing, upsetting, and brilliant. Shocking if that's how kids actually speak to teachers.
Mm.
I wouldn't want to be a teacher.
Hey? No, geez.
Yes, that's a cuck job. I mean, it would have been fun. Like when I was at school, I used to think, ooh, this could be a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You're teaching kids, you're presenting information to them for the first time on really amazing subjects, biology and history and that kind of thing. But then I thought, nah, these horrible, horrible other people's children. I don't want to know.
I was on that route. I mean, I was in matric when the TED approached me to, you know, get a bursary from them and to study teaching.
What would you have taught?
English.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's what I did. I had a bursary. I started studying English at the Iranse Afrikaanse Universiteit. Great place to learn English.
Great place to do English. Hello, I are your English teacher.
And I messed around in the first year, although it was quite difficult because I was learning, I had English. I was learning Northern Sotho in Afrikaans, Zulu in Afrikaans, and French in Afrikaans.
Yeah.
So it was quite challenging. And then linguistics and
that's very taxing.
Psychology and sure. stats and all of that. And then realized that I would have to become a teacher. And, you know, that's how you pay back a bursary.
Mm.
And like, just
no.
The schools had changed at that point, and I just thought, yeah, not for me.
Not happening.
Yeah. It was close.
Well, I'm pleased that what teaching's loss was our gain. Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, Flex is especially for you. I found an embarrassing white lady who sings in a forest.
Oh, boy.
You know these self-appointed people? Again, these are the people that really, I don't know why, but they drive me crazy. The ones who appoint themselves as the representative for all the other downtrodden people or people who they regard as, you know, underprivileged.
But they're told all their lives that you can make a difference in the world.
No, well, I think this woman's just a typical lefty. She's been raised on this nonsense, probably had hippie parents or whatever. And they said to her, you know, your job on earth is to always care about the less fortunate than you. And you only know you're a good person if you're helping someone who's less fortunate than you. And she's the kind of person who probably did become a teacher. I don't know what this person does or who they are, but this came up on my feed and I was like, oh, Flex is going to love this for starters. And second of all, she's standing in a forest, all right? It's outside in winter in Canada or in one of those northwestern states in America. I'm like, no one on earth asked for you. No one on earth wants your help. No one wants this terrible song, by the way, that she sings. It's the worst song you could possibly imagine. I know kids who have brain damage who could come up with a better song than this at age 3. Okay.
So
take a look. I don't know who this is. I wish I could apologize on behalf of her family, whoever made her. Someone's got to take responsibility. But nonetheless, let's start our morning with this chick. There we go.
Black and indigenous people of color. Black and indigenous people of color. Lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, and queer. Lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, and queer. Asian American Pacific Islander. Asian American Pacific Islander, Latino Hispanic Romani and Creole, Latino Hispanic Romani and Creole. We all have a place in this world. We all have a place in this world.
Now, I always, whenever you hear any of these lefties singing, they always have to repeat the line twice because it's like a.
Does she realize that
it's a call
the
and
song
and
would have
respond.
Worked if she didn't have to repeat each line?
Well,
I'm highly annoyed.
But do you know why? Because people on the left are stupid. They've got like low intelligence, so you have to sing it and then they must sing it back to you. That's why I say she's probably a teacher because she. This is how and. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, ma'am. Mm. You know, that kind of thing. It's like the first of all, there's no black, Hispanic, people of color, bi, lesbian, gay, Pacific Islander who's sitting
Creole.
There going, who's going, thank you so much. I really needed you to stand up for me, Deirdre, or whatever your name is, right? It's Deirdre. It's probably something like that. Fuck. And then she looks so proud of herself at the end of it. She's like,
like she's made a huge difference.
Everyone's going to see this,
I
and it's very important.
She should go back into her little hut and carry on doing what she was doing before she made that song.
She wasn't doing anything. That's the problem. She's not
busy.
That's
fine. Let her just do nothing rather.
Yeah. What a cuck song.
Don't let her do something.
So Flex, is that your new favorite?
Do you feel more accepted as a black man because of this woman's song?
As a black man, are you feeling like you're included more by her terrible song? Like you were feeling left out. Now you feel better. Huh? Yeah. Well, I don't even know her and I'm embarrassed. There's also this woman who, I don't know why these things are coming up on my feed. But
because you're talking about them.
No.
You've said women in forest and now you're going to be fed women in forests.
No, but watch. So this is an old lady called Dr. Sue. And she's got a little puppet called Tedley. This is a grown woman, all right?
Boy.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who just have these are like for Dr. Hanan, this is ripe pickings. These are people who are desperate to be important. They really want and they love to sing and they're going to foist their singing on you no matter what you do. They foisters.
Yeah.
They foist on you. You're sitting minding your own business and they must foist their songs on you.
It's like when people drive with the windows down and their music on. That they foist on you.
Oh, drives me up the wall. So this is, I don't know. First of all, she's Dr. Sue, but I can guarantee you she's not a medical doctor. And you know I have
she's
a problem.
She's like the Dr. Seuss of Dr.
That's
Seuss.
That's it. But she's, oh God. Like obviously there's a stage at which they just mentally stop advancing. they get stuck in sort of early teens where that kind of stuff would embarrass most of us, but for them, it's something that got them attention. Like someone said, oh, you know, Sue, you can really sing beautifully.
Yeah.
And then she went.
You should ask Sue. She can really sing beautifully.
Yeah, Sue, why don't you? Or her parents were those parents who were like, our daughter Sue is the best singer and she's going to sing for us at lunch today. And then everyone else at the table's like, oh, fuck. But no one said anything, right? Because people lie.
Yeah.
So anyway, here she is. And she does this thing called new word.
Okay.
All right, where she brings you a new word, but she always starts it off with a song because she can show off her voice, you know, because she needs people to know that that's her special talent, this old bag. All right, so take a look.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sue, and this is New Word. New Word only takes a moment. New Word is an open door. New Word, when you keep on learning, soon you'll learn so much more. New Word. And this is my little pal, Tedley.
Hello.
Hello, Tedley. Our new word is crocus. Crocus is a flower that appears in the early spring. It's often purple. That's why I'm wearing a purple scarf. A crocus is a perennial. That means it comes back every year. I love spring and perennials and crocuses and the thaw. That's the season between winter and spring. So I wrote a little song about it. It goes like this. Spring comes in on little purple feet, winter sighs and thaws a soft retreat. New word.
You know, I don't know why someone doesn't just see her do it, because she's doing this in public. Just see her doing it next to the lake or the river or whatever she's in, and just push her in. Just push her in with Tedley and let them both just fucking sink to the bottom. Tie a rock to her and push her and Tedley in. And the fact that she has this puppet, who's she doing this for? I don't want her new word.
Well,
do you?
If she did, somebody send it to you or did you?
No, someone sent it to me.
Okay, I'm just a little concerned about what's in your on your format.
You can have my. I can give you access to my phone. You can find all the things on my feed. That should not be coming up on my feed.
It should.
I hate it.
Probably.
Are you listening?
Oh dear, shame.
Okay, so she's a really annoying old bag. That feminist in the forest is also annoying. Have you had enough of those sorts of people?
Yes, I have.
Have you guys
had
enough?
My full.
Is that enough for one day? Or do you want more? Oh, yeah, but that, okay, so here's the difference, is these guys are not foisting. These guys just look like they're just having a lekker time, right? It's a bunch of dads. Well, I mean, some of them are slightly older even than, some of them are grandpas. But look at them just having a time. They're not trying to teach you a word. They're not trying to nag and harass and harangue and hector you over your inability to sympathize with BIPOC people of color, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what you should do. And again, I'm sorry that the gender difference here is so absolutely striking. But like, these fucking bags must just stop telling everyone what to do and do what the guys do. Just like, have a nice song. So here we go.
If I had a hammer, I'd have her in the morning. I'd have her in the evening. If I had a spell, I'd drink it in the morning, I'd drink it in the evening, all over this land. I'd drink a picture, I'd drink a morning, I'd drink a love between the brothers and the sisters, all over this land. If I had a soul,
all right, that's enough. That's enough. I think that's quite enough happiness for one morning. Did you not enjoy that,
no,
Leanne?
No.
Leanne didn't enjoy it at all.
I think I might have preferred the teacher. She had more purpose. Those guys didn't have any purpose.
They were having a fun time singing a song.
So was she.
No, 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 no. They were doing a group activity. And they weren't foisting.
Oh,
there was no foisting with them.
They were on an actual stage performing.
Yeah. I don't understand how that's a problem. The one chick's in the forest disturbing the animals.
Look, they're, I
the other chick's
think
next to the
bad.
River. And I think it's way. No, you think they're the same? No. Uh-uh.
Mm.
All right. Well, here's a feminist author who says she's discovered how to stop online dating, and she's found something else to busy herself with. And she's also in a forest. So again, really, like white ladies letting themselves down. Why I stopped online dating and started fingering my own ass.
No, that cannot be real.
Yes, it is. And that's an editor of a... Yes, it is. Look at her. You can tell by the face. You know that she means it.
Oh, that's gross. Oh, no.
So yeah, that's great, huh? Don't you love it?
I don't know if it's real. I don't know if I believe it.
All right, so let's rescue the reputation of white women here quickly, and let's show the fat asses of a bunch of black women who really have let themselves down, because unfortunately these girls, as you'll see in the video, can't even fit through a door because of their big booties. So take a look at this, because I don't know who, they're probably guys who are into this.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But you should be ashamed of yourself, because also if you're a woman and you let yourself, there's just no way you could be comfortable in a car. How do you sit? How do you sit? You're going to see what I mean. These asses are enormous. Okay, these women are not shapely or slightly overweight or curvaceous.
So it's not a genetic thing.
Hell, these, I don't think it's possible.
Do you think it's an eating thing?
I think it's got to be that combined with very bad genes, because this is not good for your back. This is not good for your front.
It's not good for your sides.
It's not good for your sides. Just have a look. I mean, you tell me. And these women are all over the internet. Clearly, there are a bunch of guys who, almost like those fat people who have feeders. You know, they're guys who are turned on by, yeah, they're enablers. So you should be ashamed of yourself, guys, if you're into this, because it's not on. Okay?
Good. So
She has to pull that skapezan right down.
Huh? What does they say? Bulldogs fighting under
pulling,
a sheet.
Yeah, she's constantly pulling it down because it goes, I'm going up. I don't care what you want. I'm taking this upstairs.
No, you anyway. Can see that that's a lot of overeating as well.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
And we should not glamorize this sort of thing. It's very, very bad.
Oh, but it is glamorized. That's what you get on. If you are on South African TikTok, that's what you will find.
How embarrassing. I thought we'd been embarrassed enough in the news lately. So South Africa's suddenly on the global media radar, according to Leanne.
Yeah.
Even our tiny little research base in Antarctica is making the news. What happened here?
James has to bring me my phone so that I have all the proper information. Yes. But it was a very...
That's what we keep him for, though. It was a very Thanks, James.
Small story that the Sunday Times reported on, not this Sunday, I think the Sunday before, yes, about our base where they send, I think it's up to 9 people at a time.
Okay.
And they have to live there for the entire, like, 9-month period or whatever it is. So... And it's weird as well that BBC picked up on it because apparently one of the people at the bases contacted the BBC for some reason.
Did you see that they sent a bunch of flat earthers to Antarctica?
No.
So they sent a group of flat earthers to Antarctica, these people who think that the earth is flat. You know, there's a whole society of them online. The internet has made it possible for very, very embarrassing and shitty things to happen. And for people to feel... Because other people are in, you know, partaking in these crazy and embarrassing things, that it's acceptable. We've got to, as Ben and Simpiwe and I have said on a Friday many times, we've got to bring back shame. We've got to make it shameful.
Yeah.
Anyway, these flat earthers, I think there were 4 of them that went on an expedition, especially to see that the sun doesn't set in the middle of the southern hemisphere's winter. Summer, sorry. So that they could see that the sun was always in the sky.
Yes.
Which would prove to them that the earth was round, because if the earth was flat, that wouldn't be possible.
Okay.
So these people went. I think 3 of the 4 decided, no, it's definitely true that the earth is round, and had to recant and are no longer members of the Flat Earth Society. And these were like flat earth influencers, okay? You know, like those big booty women we saw just now. They're like big booty influencers. So these are... These are big booty people who, well, not big booty people, but big flat earther people.
Yes. You go around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that they've designated themselves to do this.
And now they've had to recant. Apparently the other flat earthers are very, very upset with them. It's kind of, they don't have friends anymore. All their friends were in the Flat Earth Society.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get this done, they had to go to Antarctica. I wonder if they stayed at our base.
Oh, perhaps.
Maybe.
So apparently it started with assault claims, like sexual harassment claims.
Oh, well, it's a long winter. It's a cold, dark place.
The thing is, they are so isolated that they have to undergo major psychological tests before they go.
Wow, that's our base?
Yeah.
Looks horrible.
Yeah.
It's like a villain's lair in Bond movie.
And... Apparently, within the first 3 months, psychologists have said in the first 3 months, there's some phenomenon that happens where people realize they really are going to be alone and with these people for a full year.
Oh, I'd go mad. So that's our base. Is it on stilts?
Yes.
Oh.
And apparently, one of them's gone a bit crazy and has like started threatening women within the group.
It's a guy.
Yeah. But apparently...
Well, you can shoot him in Antarctica. No one will know.
I don't even know if they have...
He just won't come back.
Weapons of that sort.
He fell in a crevice.
But they've actually called for an evacuation, like an emergency evacuation.
Of him?
Of the whole team.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the problem is the weather, the reason why they're there for the amount of time that they are, I think it's 9 months, is because there's only 3 months within which you can collect them or drop them off because of the weather.
Can you imagine how frightening it is to be stuck in a place like that where you can't get in or out? Other people can't come in and you can't get out, right? And one of them just goes a little cuckoo.
Bit of a loose cannon, yeah.
Yeah, and now you have to sleep with one eye open. I think it's frightening.
It's hugely
frightening. It's the makings of a great horror movie.
Of a movie.
Yeah.
And apparently you start becoming so overly concerned and obsessed when you realize how alone you are over things like food rations. Mm-hmm. Fights break out really easily. Things annoy you to the power of 40. So the noise that a person makes when they sip their coffee.
Oh.
Can you imagine? And everything around you is so quiet, like, and eerie as it is.
There's people being in the International Space Station, you know, that Elon just rescued. I had this big argument with someone on Friday. Yeah, I went to lunch on Friday. This one guy's like, oh, come on, Elon didn't rescue anyone. Like, I don't even know how to have a conversation with someone who's, you know, that's like saying, no, the sky is definitely bright orange because you saw a sunset once, but the rest of the day it's also orange. Like, you please don't. Anyway, he rescued those people from the International Space Station. Mm. And I was thinking, imagine being trapped, because those are technically the loneliest people.
Mm.
You know, if you're on a spacewalk outside the ISS, you're not, it's not even a question. You are like the loneliest. If something happens to you and you float off into space, you become more and more lonely as you get further and further away from every other human being. But if you're trapped in this, and it's tight, right? There's not a lot of room.
Mm.
Like, if you had a space as big as this, and we've got a studio here, it's, I don't know, 40, 50 square meters. But can you imagine how cabin fever is what they call it?
Yeah.
Imagine being caught in the International Space Station, and everything's floating around all the time, and you know your muscles atrophy because you don't have any reason to. There's no resistance, so you can't actually build muscle. So they basically waste away, and you're trapped up there while they try to organize a rescue here on Earth. I mean, it must be horrific. People put themselves through unbelievable hell because of, in the case of our base in Antarctica and in the ISS, science.
Mm.
And you think about, again, this movie I watched, this Master and Commander, these guys would get onto these ships and you might be gone for 2 years before you'd see home again. And you're on a wooden prison, because that's what it must feel like. The highlight of your day is when you get your grog, which is like watered down rum, because you can't drink the water, you know, because it won't be fresh for long.
Mm-hmm.
And you can gather rainwater if you're lucky, but if it doesn't rain, you're in big trouble. There aren't flushing toilets, so you can imagine the smell.
Mm-mm.
There aren't showers, because this is 1800.
Yeah.
I mean, it's set in the time of the Napoleonic Wars, and you have mutinies, and you have the weirdest thing is it reminded me, because in the movie they're very, very good about historical accuracy. And what's so amazing about that movie is that they show you how old the kids are that are deck officers and that kind of thing. So these kids are probably, I don't know, 10 years old.
What?
Yeah. And these kids would have been the children of, they would have been like the second or third sons of aristocrats or landed gentry or whatever. And they'd be sent to the Navy to go and explore the world. If they had a curious mind, they might become a naturalist or a botanist or something. And this was your way to explore the world. And you think, Jesus, at 10 years old, these little kids.
Sure.
Oh. Losing their arms because cannons blow them off or whatever. And they grow up really fast.
Mm.
You know, it's just such a great movie to remind yourself of how we've got it so good right now. And even if if you're stuck in Antarctica or on the International Space Station, we've got it so good right now. My goodness.
Sure.
So anyway, all of that's going on. This guy put together a little video of why it's good not to be fat. And you don't have to tell me, but maybe we should tell those women in the corridor that we showed you on the video just before. This guy he explains why if you're fat, you're also stupid.
Oh.
Have a look at this.
Up your alley.
Very important. No, I'm not saying it. I believe it, but I'm not saying it. Take a look.
your weight goes up. The size and function of the brain goes down. Somebody's got to like say the truth. And then people go, oh, but you're fetching. And it's like, no, I published a study on 33,000 people. It lowers blood flow to your brain. It prematurely ages your brain. It increases inflammation. It changes your genetics. Fat stores toxins. You're more likely to be depressed. It damages your immunity, takes healthy testosterone, turns it into unhealthy cancer-promoting forms of estrogen, and impairs your sleep. The truth is, being at an unhealthy weight is unhealthy for your brain and body.
Hmm. Okay, sure. So another reason not to be morbidly obese, okay? It actually affects your brain.
What he says, I mean, it makes absolute sense.
Totally.
It's not something groundbreaking, but when you put it together and you aim it specifically at one causation, i.e. Yeah. fat stored in your body, then it's quite striking.
Well, I mean, let's say 5 years ago, we wouldn't have publicly wanted to encourage any conversation like this because it would have been fat shaming.
Mm.
I think that's how much we've changed. We're back to, no, this is bad and people need to be told the truth. It's not about how you feel. It's about what's true. And I think we're getting back there now.
Mm.
You know, you can bullshit yourself all you like, but it's not going to make you feel any better. Actually, in the long term, you're going to feel a whole lot worse because now people are lying to you, as well as all the health problems he's already indicated for people who are morbidly obese or overweight. You've got to know these things. You've got to be aware of these things. There's no point in someone telling you what you want to hear instead of telling you what you need to hear. And I think that era is now over. I think it's a good thing it's over. I'm not a fan of us pretending and lying to each other.
Mm.
Anyway, let's see what happens. Speaking of big fat people, the blobfish. So the blobfish is the world's ugliest animal. It's been named the fish of the year in which country? Look at it.
Oh.
So fucking ugly. It's been named fish of the year in New Zealand.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's called the world's ugliest animal. It's been voted New Zealand's fish of the year.
They're normally named fish of the year, or I don't know, whatever animal it is of the year, bird. There was a bird thing.
Yeah.
If there is a cause behind it. So let's say it's because it's becoming extinct or it's overfished.
Well, this competition has aimed to raise awareness of deep sea conservation.
Oh, there you go.
Supporters celebrating the blobfish moment in the sun. It's native to the deep waters near Australia and New Zealand. It appears normal at depth, but it turns mushy when it's brought to the surface.
Oh, ew.
It's gross, right?
Mm.
A late surge in votes helped by radio hosts. Oh, hi, everybody. We're on the radio. We're encouraging you. Sorry, with a New Zealand accent. We really need you to vote for this fish. This fish needs your vote. Here it is. We're going to show you a picture of this fish, and we'd really like you to vote for it. Here it is, the blobfish. Isn't it beautiful?
So in other words, it looks better underwater.
Could it? That is an ugly-ass thing.
Yeah. Although, imagine eating that. Imagine that someone brought that out on a plate.
You want to eat that. And it's almost got like this little flap over here, which looks like a bit of a nose.
A penis on its forehead.
Well, I don't know if you'd call it a penis, but it's like a nose.
An elongation thing.
It's revolting. A trunk. Hey, have we got Dr. Hanan on? All right, well, why didn't you tell me? We keep the man waiting. We're talking about stupid fucking fish. You don't think this guy has things to do? He's got a whole bunch of mental patients to talk to today, and we're wasting his time talking about a blobfish. Oh,
kilometers and kilometers of patients.
It's just unbelievable. You've got them lined up. They lined up 10 deep outside his office, and James and Flex are like, no, just carry on talking about the stupid fish. We can do that anytime.
Penises on foreheads of fish.
Yeah, I mean, really. Listen. Do people who think they see a penis on the forehead of a fish have severe problems? Because Leanne is sitting here right now. She's totally confused. Is she deprived?
Yeah.
Is she deprived?
That's are you question. Deprived, Liam? Yeah.
That's the question. All right, so Dr. Hanan, there are a couple of things that have come up in the last while. I always prefer to, you know, hit the Monday with no real agenda, but there's stuff we can deal with today. And I love the idea that people, it even came up in the movie that I was watching. There's a lot of thematic stuff that seems to be rearing its ugly head. People are not all good at making decisions, right? They defer. Yeah. They want someone else to make the decision for them. So they outsource the decision-making power. They're terrified if they get it wrong, the consequences will be worse than them not making a decision at all. So they just sit on their hands and they don't make a decision. I think that is probably a sure sign that those people are not, they're not in charge of their own life. They're probably not the kind of people you'd want in charge of anything, because making decisions, even the wrong ones, better than not making a decision, in my opinion. Things will go much more badly if you just let the universe take its decisions for you. You let time determine a winner or a loser or a direction or anything else. There are a lot of people in this world who cannot make decisions. How do we make better decisions?
Right. So you're quite right. The common denominator of success for people actually versus unsuccessful people is the ability to make decisions. Unsuccessful people just sit on the fence and wait for the universe to decide for them. And how many times do I have to say on the show, if you're not the chess player of your life, you're a pawn in someone else's.
Yes.
If you don't have a strategy and don't make decisions, then the universe will just make one for you. And the reason why people don't want to make decisions is because, one, they don't want to fail. They don't want to make the wrong decision. And two, the reason why people don't want to make decisions is because making decisions requires you to sacrifice. Because there's no possibility of committing to a position without letting go of something else. So if I make a decision to lose weight, I have to sacrifice a chocolate cake. If I make a decision to be married, I have to sacrifice all the possibilities that I could have as a singleton. If I want to be single, then I have to sacrifice all the wonderful things that I can have in a companionship.
Right.
So making decisions actually is quite challenging because people don't want to sacrifice. And that's the difference between successful and unsuccessful, mature and immature. Immature people want to make decisions and still keep the alternative. They want to be married and act single. They want to lose weight and have the chocolate cake. Well, the universe doesn't offer you that. Mature people, successful people are able to make decisions, understanding that there's a cost, there's an alternative that you have to let go of. But the ability to make a decision, and one, your question was, how do we do it? Well, you have to understand that you can't see life as a short stint of wins and losses, because then you are going to be a slave to feeling good when you win and feeling bad when you lose. Life is a long journey. Just see these decision making as an ability to gain information and make your next move better. So it's not about what you're gaining out of it right here, right now, but rather getting feedback to make your next move more efficient, more productive, more of a winning position or winning decision. And one thing that never happens on the fence is you don't get data. You don't get information that makes your next move better. So sitting on the fence is never an option. It's never a good option. I always tell people, rather make the wrong decision than make no decision. And I call it the wrong decision only because it's just data. And you use that data to make yourself better. Now, one thing that I just want to mention that you said is people are really bad at making decisions because, one, they don't want to fail, and two, they base their decision-making on feelings. Mm. And how many times, Gareth, do we say on the show, feelings are pathological liars.
Yep.
If you base your decisions on how you feel, well, then you are just gambling with the decision, because how you feel is dependent on the cup of coffee that you drank this morning and how well you slept last night and, you know, the phone call that you had and the date that you went on and a million other things. So don't make decision based on feelings, make decision based on data.
Yeah, it seems to me that, that fear of failure is such a striking delineation between people who are brave enough to risk things and fail fast, as we've been told, you know, by the greats of Silicon Valley for the last 15 years, is that you'd rather You'd rather get it wrong and fail and then fix it quickly by making more decisions than sit there and hope.
Exactly.
Sit there and hope that someone else will make the right decision for you and that you'll move in a direction, and without like volition, without the desire to be in charge of your own life, it's never going to get better. I see a lot of people that go, oh, woe is me. Life is hard. Everybody's against me. I didn't get this job that I really wanted. I didn't get the promotion I wanted. Things are not going my way. And you're like, well, you don't seem to be in charge of your life.
Yeah. But the only way to take control is by making these decisions. But you're quite right. It's you got to make decision after decision after decision. So the reason why people don't want to make these decisions or pick a position is because they think if they get it wrong, it's really consequential. Well, I ask you and I ask the people that are listening, how many times throughout your life have you made a decision that was really a life and death? Out of all the decisions that you've had to make, how many of them were so consequential that it really changed the course of your life? Well, let me guess, not many, if any. The reality is that you're allowed to fail 1,000 times before life really punishes you. So you're allowed to make the wrong decision and then make another wrong decision and then make another wrong decision and multiply that by 100 and then get it right, and life will still reward you. What life will never reward is you sitting on the fence and not committing to a position, because then nothing happens. You don't get any feedback. So make a decision. You're allowed to fail. Don't think that your next move is the last move of your existence, but think about it as a learning curve or information or data that will just allow you to make the next move in a better way.
I suppose we all have settings too for how safe and secure we want our life to be, right? And the people who are very low risk are probably very high safety. And you can see that in society, there's this constant tension between the people who like a lot of safety, a lot of certainty, and then the people who are high risk, who want to take chances, and maybe they blow out and everything's a disaster, but maybe they also discover the cure for cancer or whatever else. And we need those things. We need both in almost equal parts, right? Because you can't raise families in totally high-risk situations. You know, you're not, your kids are going to end up disastrous because there's no security at all. Are we going to be living here today? Are we going to be there tomorrow? Is mom going to, you know, come at me with an axe? You know, you need a lot of security, but you also need a lot of risk in society and civilization. So it's a very difficult and fraught tension that we have to keep on minding between these two camps.
You know, Garrett, the most basic and the most foundational and the most accurate definition of a stressor is whenever the thing that I value is under threat. So whenever there's a threat on the thing that I value, that becomes stressful. So if my child is not feeling well, there's a threat on the thing that I value that becomes a stressor to me. If I have a fight with my wife, the thing that I value is under threat, that becomes a stressor to me. So whenever the thing that you value is under threat, that becomes a stressor to you. And the common denominator amongst everybody is that nobody likes to risk the thing that they value. But here's the difference between people that are prepared to take risk and people that are not. The people that are prepared to take risk, they don't want to risk things that they value, but they don't see it as a great of a threat. The thing that they value is people that are not prepared to take on risk. So just understand that people that are prepared to take on risk, they actually don't see their next move as really threatening, which is very healthy. So I'm prepared to step out of my comfort zone. Whatever happens, I'll fix. And if I make the next move and it doesn't work out, I'll fix that too. And I'll fix that too. And I'll fix that too. While people that are not prepared to take on risk, they see the next move as a real consequential threat on what they value. So they think if I make the next move, the thing that I value is going to be lost. My relationship will be lost. My job will be lost. My reputation will be lost. My image will be lost. My money will be lost. And it's just not aligned with reality. It's not true. So yes, you should be risk averse in terms of things that you value, but mitigate that risk by actually understanding and aligning it with a real threat, as opposed to the threats that you're just creating in your head that are not real.
It all reminds me of that slightly hackneyed poem that you know, we were taught to memorize at primary school, Rudyard Kipling's If. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one game of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. That's the whole risk thing that I just thought of now. And
yeah.
I think for a lot of people, it's very, very hard. They're too scared of losing. And we know this, Doc, you've told us before. There is an inbuilt fear response to the idea that we will lose things, which is far, far more powerful for most of us than the prospect of winning. So,
yes.
You know, you will feel worse, measurably. You'll feel worse about losing R1,000 than you will about winning R100,000. Feel good.
Definitely.
It's amazing.
Definitely. Even the thought of potentially losing, a potential loss, feels much worse than an actual gain.
Yeah.
For sure. But remember, put things in perspective. Is your next decision really consequential in terms of you losing it? And I would put it forward that it's not so consequential. You can make 100 wrong decisions and still get it right at the end.
Beautiful. That's a great thing to start the week with. Thank you, Doc. And it's good to have you on. And we will see you in a week's time. Thanks so much, Dr. Hanan Mushkin.
Bye, guys.
Very good. Huh?
Mm. Yeah. Very good. Another reason why I think people are loath to make decisions is because they don't want to take the blame for if something happens.
That's it.
So much Big easier thing. To just blame it on someone else.
Right. Because blame would mean responsibility and accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants that. People, a lot of people, let's not say people, but a lot of people are so terrified of being responsible for things. They want the power. They want the money. They want the success, but they don't want the accountability.
They want the risk to lie with someone else.
Yeah.
And we do it all the time. We do it by just voting, for instance. Yeah.
We pass on that accountability.
Mm.
No, you're right. Okay, well, we've got a lot to think about for this Monday morning. We'll be back in just a moment, taking a quick break, Leanne and I, and then we're going to be joined by Shandor Laurenti, who's the Lion guy, and we're going to have James give us some sport, which I know you're excited about. It's everyone's highlight for a Monday, so we'll get to that just now. Don't go anywhere.